Good evening, and you're very welcome to the second episode of this season of the League of Ireland Women's Podcast here on finalwhistle.ie. Of course, it's me, Bethany Early, for the next hour or so, and as always, joined by my reliable sidekick, Aaron Clark. Aaron, another week done, President's Cup finished. No Michael D, unfortunately, due to his ongoing health concerns, but a big performance from Athlone, and they'll be very happy with their start of the season.
Really, really, really good second half from Athlone. I think the only thing that people need to just be cautious of is it's the President's Cup. It's technically a glorified friendly. While it's great to win the trophy, I think from an Athlone viewpoint, it's probably a good stamp. If you're a P Mount fan, I wouldn't be getting too concerned just yet. I think P Mounts have sort of in them sort of games, like they've struggled a little bit against Athlone in recent years. So it wasn't really a surprise. I think
We'll get into that in a bit more depth later on in the show, because we're going to take a look back at the weekend's action as well as previewing all of next week's action, as all the teams, bar the team we're about to chat to, get their seasons up and running. But we are going to be joined later on in the show by Dominic Foley. Very soon we're going to be chatting to him about his appointment in Treaty United. We'll be talking about what's going on in the club, the preparation for the new season, some of his new arrivals, and I suppose how he's enjoying getting back into the game after a little bit of a break from it at this level. We're very excited to see what the future has in store for everyone down in the Markets Field. There seems to be a lot of really good things happening in Limerick around the club, both on the men's and women's side. We'll be hearing from Dominic all about that in just a few moments. We'll also be chatting to Sean McCabe, who is the head of climate justice and sustainability at Bohemians, all about their announcement this week of their women's side playing a friendly in May against the Palestinian national women's side. And of course, that's all very topical at the moment in the wider sense of the world, not just in the women's football world, but we'll be talking about that in 20 minutes time or so with Sean. Plenty to come in the show, but first we might just
We have to talk about the international draw as well, because it's probably been the
biggest... I was trying to avoid it. Like, if you're looking for a hard challenge, that's pretty much it. There's so much more we're going to chat about. Of course, the underage leagues up and running last weekend as well. Plenty of other stuff to get excited about, including that draw. We won't be getting too excited about that just yet. But let's go down to a former Irish international, six appearances for Ireland back in the day. He also had a fairly lengthy career in the UK with clubs like Wolves, Queen's Park Rangers on loan, Watford as well, famously. But did play in the League of Ireland with Bows and a title-winning campaign with Limerick as well in his retirement season just over a decade ago. He's back in Limerick this time. Marketsfield is going to be his home for the season ahead with the women's side in Treaty United. So, Dominic Foley, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. Good evening to you.
As I said, you're very, very welcome. I suppose I'm of a generation where your name rings bells as a kind of a... I suppose someone in their late teens, early 20s, kind of following the game here and abroad. And it's exciting to see someone with your reputation, with your experience, with your career coming into the women's game here in the country. I suppose, first of all, welcome to the league. And secondly, what's been your first impressions of getting your feet into the dugout in the Markets Field?
Yeah, it's it kind of happened out of nothing, I would say. I just got a phone call at work one day asking if I'd be interested. And my first reaction was, not a hope, I don't have time to do it. It was actually Tommy Barrett, the men's manager, who rang me and said, look, the club are looking for somebody to take over the ladies team and you fit the description. Will you just have a chat with them? And I kind of, more out of curiosity than anything, I said, I agreed to it eventually. So I spoke with... both the ladies who are in charge of Trinity, Noam, Mary and Kira, and they kind of sold it to me within two or three phone calls and I think two meetings. It was just something that fell on my lap, basically. I hadn't planned on doing it, and the project that they sold, it bought me when what they were selling. And we agreed to do it for 1 year and take it from there.
In terms of you saying, you know, it sort of fell onto your lap, would you have been somebody who would you have known much about what's going on in terms of the women's league and stuff like that over previous seasons? Like, how would you, you know, would you have kept an eye on things?
Yeah, well, look, I'm a sports fan. I know what's going on in rugby, soccer, hurling, GAA, everything. So I would have known what was going on, but to be literally knowing who the players were, no, I did not know. I could tell you who was top of the league, who was second, and who were bottom. And I knew Treaty and Cork City, which would be the two local clubs to me, weren't doing very well. I think I'm like everybody else over the last 5 to 10 years, maybe, that the ladies' game is growing and growing and growing. So it's like male sport for the last 100 years, whether you like it or not, it's around you now and you're surrounded by it. And look, I have an interest in it. I'd follow the ladies' GAA, the camogie, and the football, and of course the soccer being local to me, I'd always check and see how they're doing. But intimate knowledge of players and how the clubs were doing and things like that, no, I can't claim that one.
You mentioned the two teams, and anyone who's followed the league in recent seasons will know that they've been at that end of the table. So it's not an easy sell. It's not like someone coming in saying, oh, you've got European football to look forward to. You've got a title challenge to look forward to. Realistically, this year, I don't think anybody, even probably yourself, is going to say Treaty going to challenge at the top end of the table. They've made progress in recent seasons. But it must be a hard sell. What exactly was it when you sat down with the two girls that that really got you to say yes to this challenge?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing, obviously, Ciara and Mary are both Irish international, ex-Irish internationals. Secondly, they said that they had investment for the ladies' team, that we wouldn't be looked at as the second team in the club. We will be equal to the men. Obviously, I relied heavily on their knowledge of the ladies' game for the first pre-season. With regards to recruitment, we spend a lot of time on the phone and a lot of time texting. And it's, as you just said there, for the last few years, we've been rooted to the bottom of the table. There's been a few false dawns in the club. So we have an issue with a lot of local girls actually leave Limerick and the surrounding areas to go and play with teams in Wexford and Galway and Dublin. And it was kind of head-scratching for a while to see how a girl would be driving past Limerick to go to Dublin to play. But it obviously came down to the history of the club for over the last 5 years. So we went down the other route then of recruiting from Canada, where Ciara has a strong connection, obviously, and has had football camps and has a football school out there. So I made my wish list to her, if she was able to get me some players, and she has done a brilliant job from what I can see. All the players that have come in have improved our squad immensely. It's brought up the level of training within the other girls, the local girls. They now know what they have to aim for and what they're competing with. So it's, yeah, look, it's something. When I met the girls, I said, I see this as a 3-year project. Whether I'll be around for the 3 years or not is another thing, but I think for the club, and my job was to be able to put my input into it and see what they should be looking at. But it's definitely a 3-year project if they want to end up where they're aiming for. And to do that, look, we need to have some bit of more success on the field. We have to show that the club has been run properly now. We have to show that we have ambition. And by doing that, we will hopefully attract more of the local girls back to the club in the future.
I have to hold my hands up. Rafni, I've been giving out about this on social media, about the influx of players. But Ciara's sort of saying over recent weeks about the fact of they've turned so many young players or local players have turned it down. What's that like though, Dominic, when you're sort of coming into that situation? And because we're only seeing it now when Ciara actually says these players turned it down, or you know, these, what's it like from a managerial point of view when younger players or players, local players are like, no, I don't really want to go to Treaty? Is that discouraging, or how do you, apart from showing the club has run well, how do you sort of break that narrative and actually get them to sort of come? We've seen it with teams like Bowes for a couple of years where players might necessarily have went there where they're starting to go now. How do you sort of break that dynamic?
I don't see it as a negative. I see it as a challenge. I know myself, look, I was a professional for 18 years, luckily, so I know I'd be doing the exact same thing and looking at a club going, oh, I'm not so sure about that at the moment, but if you show me what you're about, maybe there's a chance the next time. So because I've been in the situation myself, I can totally understand it 100%. And I left every conversation with every girl that we spoke to, keep my number. If I can help you going forward, you know where we are. And look, that's all you can do. You can put your best foot forward, show them or try to explain to them the project that we're starting on. But it's not unusual that they might go, oh, I've heard this one before. So I don't take it personally. I don't see anything wrong with it because they have a choice to make. But I'm hoping that in the future, they'll become knocking on our doors instead of us going to them. So I see it as a challenge.
It is a case really of keeping the youngsters coming through that funnel, that academy really, and showing them that they've got a future in the game. In terms of the positive stuff, let's talk about on the field stuff over the last few months. You've had a couple of months to get your foot, kind of just get used to the run of the game down there. And in terms of the girls you're going to be working with, your first thoughts on the squad that you've got, the players you've got, some of the new signings. We don't know much about these girls other than what we can kind of see on stats sites for their college careers or whatever it might be. Some exciting talent. Are we going to be seeing some treaty players lighting up the league in the same way maybe as Annie Uliak did in the first half of last season and a couple of other of the girls that came in?
Yeah, hopefully. Look, first of all, when we're coming into a squad that's been there for the last few years and now the standard of players has improved, we had the tough task of letting a lot of girls go as well that had given a lot of commitment and dedication to the club. So we don't forget that either. But look, by becoming a bigger and stronger club, unfortunately, that's part of the road for that. So we had to leave some girls go. With regards to the girls that we have re-signed in, and a lot of local girls as well, not as many as we'd hoped, but some local girls who, like, we've played the under-17s inside in Limerick and we've played the under-19s and just training matches. And some of the talent inside within the club is frightening. It actually surprised me massively when I saw it, especially with the under-17 team that Mary looks after. There's some serious players there. I think they have 5 or 6 being called up to recent under-16 international teams. So they're all playing a year or two above their age in the league. So the future is very bright for the club. And with myself, then I have the likes of Fiona Bradley, Katie Lawley, Grace Gleason, Grace McInerney, Hannah Saidi. Like, all these girls are still 17 years of age and younger. So it's, I keep saying to them, in 3 or 4 years' time, if you can keep everybody together and add in your few bits of experience, there is a team there I can see that will be challenging to win the league. If we can keep the club where we have it now and move it forwards little by little every year. So there's serious talent in the club.
Two of the players you've mentioned there are players, well, we all know what Fiona Bradley does. McInerney and Lolly are, for me, are two breathing guards there, are highly to watch. In terms of when you first stepped into the dressing room, Dominic, compared to say now, like what was your expectation when you take that job, you go to the first day of the preseason? What was your expectation then, and has it changed now compared to seeing the levels within the squad?
Look, from day one when I walked in the door, I said to the girls, my aim for this year is to be better than we used to be. So whether I walked in and I was training a group of under-10s or whether I was going in training the senior team, my aim as a coach, if I'm getting back into coaching, would be, can I make each better player and provide an environment for them to get better? I'm a basics kind of guy, that the basics of the game are the most important part of the game for me. So that's where I'm starting. It's our motto on our WhatsApp group even, can you be better than you used to be? And that's all we're asking of the girls. And we as a club then have to put an environment there that's that helps them to make themselves better. So for me, we're looking to be better than we were last year. So that means maybe we can be third from bottom.
In terms of your own experience, Dominic, as a player, obviously spells in Portugal and also in Belgium as well, where you're dealing with different languages, different lifestyles, different kind of environments. How important is that kind of understanding of what the foreign girls who've come into your team are going through away from the dressing room, away from the pitch, will help you to kind of help them acclimatize into that squad?
Yeah, it's massive. I know it's probably more important that they're happy off the field as they are on the field. So I know the club are working hard to, we have their accommodation sorted for them. They're getting involved in coaching within the club. We're trying to keep them busy. We're trying to sort out the transport for them. All of these things are challenges for girls coming with driving licenses, for example, from Canada to Ireland. So even the whole thing of getting them transported to and from the club for training, whenever we're training into matches, is a challenge. So we're all working on that. And obviously homesickness can play a factor. For the first 6 weeks that they've been with us, some of them for 4 weeks, there's a novelty factor. But for me now is how can we keep them happy and how can we keep them interested over the next few months?
Does that buzz that's around the club at the minute, because we see the men's game a couple of weeks ago, the markets field absolutely rammed. Does that sort of thing help you in this situation? Because, you know, they get to go and see the other side of the club, see more of the club, see what's going on and sort of, you know, get them going. But I think ultimately it's probably just about as soon as they start playing games to when they really start to settle.
Yeah, if they're still only settling, I'm delighted with them already. Every one of the girls that have come in have added something for us. Our two centre backs, Kayla Kyle and Talia White, are what I like to call proper defenders. They enjoy defending. They'll stick their leg in, they'll stick their head in, they'll slide tackle, you know. And I just feel a lot of modern football now, your two centre backs like to be as good on the ball as the number 10 does. And again, back to my basics, you're a defender, I want you to be able to defend first, and they can defend. We have two then kind of central midfield players, Erin Van Dolder and Gillian O'Toole, who are both very good on the ball. Like, Erin is like a machine. She's run all day and she'll tattle all day, and Gillian is good on the ball. And then we have Kayla Bucks, who we've been playing on kind of the right side or the left side of three. She's really good with the ball at her feet, and she can run and take people on, and she can finish. So every one of them are after bringing something new to us. And as I said, are helping to push the other girls in to bring their standards up.
In terms of the season ahead, Dominic, obviously idle this week, you get a chance to maybe...
Sorry, I nearly forgot my number 10, Delana Fraser as well. She is very strong and athletic and has an eye for going forward, which again is very important. It's one thing to keep the ball out at the back, but obviously you have to be able to put it away at the other end as well. So, yeah, every one of them have brought a new dimension to us, definitely.
Don't worry, I guarantee you've forgotten someone, you'll be reminded about it. I guarantee you have.
She's a little bit of an injury. She's a little bit of an injury at the moment, so I was only checking in her a while ago, so I shouldn't have forgotten her.
In terms of, I suppose, the season ahead, obviously we saw a bit of a start, kind of the early rise from the ashes for Treaty last year in terms of the last couple of seasons, some good wins, finished off the bottom of the table, which is, I suppose, nice as well from the club's point of view. You've come in, you've given it that little bit of a kick, there's extra recruitment coming in. What success for Treaty this year? Is it on the field? Is it in terms of governance and the structure off the field? Or is it just that, I suppose, putting it in the perception of those players in the region that Treaty is now a viable option for them to go and improve themselves?
Yeah, but like, it's talk is cheap and the talk is easy. It's easy for me to sit here and do this, but we have to back it up. I think our head of academy, Declan Farmer, who's been with Treaty and formerly Limerick, has said he's gone through like 5 or 6 owners in his time at the club. So we need stability. We need a plan which is in place at the moment. And we need an environment that players are coming to and they're happy. Like some of the girls I spoke to in the off season trying to recruit with some other clubs. And like I'm trying to say, look, it's way easier to come to us. It's less travel. It's we have a good environment, trying to sell the story to them. And they said, but I'm happy where I am. I have good friends. I'm welcomed and I feel wanted. And like that was very poignant for us as a club going forward. And I have all these written down in my notes from every girl that I spoke to and what they said about the club that they're at and why they want to stay there instead of making life easier and coming back to us. So there are things that we have to aim for. We have to put in place. We have to be all the girls that were with us at the moment come the end of the season. We want no doubt in their heads, but they're staying here next season. And that would be a success. Okay, all the marketing, we have to bring money into the club to keep a club viable. There's people working very hard on that side of things. But I'm always of the belief, no matter what sport it is, no matter what level you're playing at, when your first teams at the club are doing well, everything else follows. So for the men's team to have a great start to the league, 3 wins out of 3, I guarantee you the under-20s and the under-17s and the under-15s are going into training, bouncing with, oh, I want to be in that team. And that's what we want in the ladies' team, that when we start playing, when we start hopefully getting our first points under our belts, that the girls underneath are looking up at us going, I want to be in there. And we want the girls, this 19s, the 17s, everyone else to know the names of the girls on the first team. And you, when they know the names of the girls in the first team, you know you're aiming in the right direction then.
Well, anything we can help to put the names of the players into the public perception, both within the club and around the area and nationally, we're more than happy to help you. Dominic, thank you so much for coming and joining us. We could have kept you for double the length of time because there's so much I want to get into in terms of your own career. We might touch on that with you later on in the season if we have you back on the show. But thank you so much. The very best of luck. Enjoy this weekend scouting and the very best of luck when your own season gets up and running in 7 or 8 days' time.
Thank you very much, guys. Lovely to meet you.
Dominic Foley there. Absolute pleasure to have him on the show. I watched him as a kid. Now, I won't say as a kid because I wasn't quite a kid, but I was a teenager, 20s at the time. Exciting player. I remember big excitement when he came back to Bowes. I know he moved on from there again down the line, but Aaron, any familiarity yourself with his playing days?
Ah, come on. Give over. It's well before my time, unfortunately. But I'm excited to see what his, I'm excited to see what his managerial career truly does. I think there's a lot of positives. We're talking about Treaty for a lot of different reasons this year. Listen, I think Albin House have done great work last year. I think the buzz around the club is probably, we've never seen it before on both sides, the men and women. So it's great. Pre-season, we won't read a lot into it. They had some really good results, but them, it all kicks off next week when they play DLR Waves. And I'm sure if they can get off to a positive start against Waves, it may send a few reverberations around the league that Treaty have made massive improvements, and I wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, them maybe double their points tally this year, pick up a couple of more wins. I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah, early signs are good in pre-season, so here's hoping there's some good news for everybody involved in Treaty, both the men and the women. I think it's a great project and I look forward to following their progress through the year. Anyway, let's move on to something that caught my attention a couple of days ago. I think it was announced yesterday morning about an exciting one-off game that's going to take place between the Bohemians FC women's side and the Palestinian national team. I don't know if you caught this yourself, Aaron, the other day.
Literally minutes after it was announced, I had a text message off somebody being like, can we make sure we have accreditation for this game straight away? The first thing I got, and it's to be honest with you, I'd known that Bowes were trying to do something. I probably expected it would have been the men's side, but it's probably a little bit more difficult to do with the men's side. The thing for me is Bowes have got the jersey with the Palestine the thing, and if you ever sit in the Jody stand in Dalymount, if you look straight across, you'll always see a building where there's a Palestine flag sitting on top of it. And it's been there for years. And it's no real surprise to see Bowes doing this. I think it'll really capture the imagination of the public. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's the first time we see the women's side sell out Dalymount Park.
Well, they might even have to move it to the Aviva if the early intentions come to fruition, because I think there's going to be huge interest in this game. And as you said, getting access to the ground could be an issue in itself, as both have been having all season because of the capacity limit. But let's not waffle about it any further. Let's bring in the man who's going to tell us all about the game, the background behind it, and why the Palestine Women's National side will be coming to Dublin in, 10 weeks' time to play that fixture. Sean McCabe, who is the... I'm going to mess this up, Sean. I'm going to apologise. It's the Climate Justice and Sustainability Officer for Bohemians. Did I get that right?
That's close enough. Thanks, Breffney.
Welcome to the show. I suppose we reached out to Bohemians when we saw the news, and thanks to Daniel Lambert and yourself, you've joined us for the evening. First of all, we get the sentiment behind it and why this would make sense to people in terms of raising awareness of what's going on in Palestine at the moment. But why the football game, and why is this something that Bohemians felt they had to get involved in?
Well, I think the relationship that we have enjoyed both with the Palestinian ambassador and Palestine Sports for Life, the organization we've been involved with, is really just kind of a recent manifestation of a much longer empathy and support that Bo's members have had for the Palestinian struggle for decades, right? It's nothing new, as Aaron was mentioning there before we came on. There's the flags around Phibsborough. The fans have been bringing flags to games for years. We've got a Visit Palestine ground board at the stadium. So it's not a new thing, the relationship and the commitment to the Palestinian cause.
In terms of the game itself, you know, we saw talks, the FAI saying they were trying to do stuff. We seen Boas quickly coming out and saying, we're nearly there. How did it come about that it would be the women's side to play the game? And, like, what do you expect? Because even Breffin was saying there, the interest is going to be massive. Like, what do you expect from it? Do you expect, like, it's obviously going to raise a lot of money for a good cause.
Yeah, well, that's the hope, isn't it? Right, like, you know, what's going on currently in Palestine is horrific. There's no words. We're a football club. The best thing we can do is use football as a force for good. And that was the motivation long before this current catastrophe was unfolding. You know, we had the jersey that came out last year. It was a commitment to work and provide resources to one of the most densely populated camps for displaced people in the world, which was in Tulkaram in the West Bank. And there's a girls football team there and a wider Palestine Sport for Life program there that has been receiving resources from the sale of that jersey. We've been able to make a couple of payments from those sales over the last year. As part of that relationship, there was an existing commitment that we would actually go out and hopefully bring coaches out to Palestine last year to work in Palestine with those teams that we were supporting. Unfortunately, just between how busy we are and how stretched we can become during the season, that those visits didn't happen. And then obviously world events overtook us, right? So we had maintained that connection, and we had also started a conversation about having a match here in Dublin, and had reached out to the Palestinian FA through the ambassador here way back in the middle of last year. So those conversations progressed, and there were a number of ideas brought up, and a number of suggestions, and eventually it became clear that the Palestinian FA were coming to Dublin this week. And the ambassador invited us into the mission to meet with them. And we went in actually with the idea of the women's game being a preferable option because, A, we were already involved with a girls' team out in Palestine. There's a lot to be said for how empowering this event would be for girls and women in Palestine. It still provides scope for the FAI to organize a fully fledged international friendly between the men's sides, which obviously would be a fantastic thing as well. And they have indicated that that's something they're looking into. So I think this really is just nothing but positive news all around.
On a practical level, I think the 15th of May is the date. Is that, am I correct in that?
15th of May, yeah. It's a Wednesday.
Dalyman Park obviously will be the venue. When will tickets be released for that? Because I'd imagine there'll be huge interest in this.
Yeah, there absolutely will. And we've been inundated with questions about tickets already. Like you said at the top of the piece, we only had the meeting on Monday. We announced Tuesday and we're still figuring out the logistics. But we'll hopefully come out with tickets in the coming week or so.
To continue on that, if there is, I know we saw, for example, the Liam Miller tournament, or not tournament, but the Liam That's Miller in Parky Cueve, where it ended up being down in Cork, where it got moved just purely to demand. Is that a distinct possibility? If there's 10,000 people who want tickets to this or even more, just maybe not necessarily because it's women's football, but because of the cause it's supporting and it's a direct event and it's public and it's very high profile, or it will be very high profile when it rolls around. Is there an option to move it if obviously you want it to be in Dalyman, but is there an option maybe if there was unprecedented that we would end up in the Aviva with this? Has that been considered even?
Well, like, I think ultimately what it boils down to, we've no desire to own such an event, you know, like it's not, but when we're having a conversation and planning it, it's no small feat running a match day. If we have to do it, like, we know Dalyman, it's where we're able to pull off a match day like this, and that's why it makes sense. It's above my pay grade really to be talking about whether something like this can easily be moved to another venue. I know for a fact it can't easily be moved, so that's part of the rationale here.
I'm not running down daily, but it's just purely in terms of the anticipation.
In terms of, you know, you have this meeting, you turn around, you make an agreement, gonna play a game. What's it like then when you sort of go and portray this message to the members? What's it like for the sort of, for the hierarchy in the club or the people behind the scenes in the club to be able to turn around and say, because you see all the flags, you see all the things at the games, what's it like when you're then able to turn around and say, we've done this, we've organised this? It must be quite pleasing.
To be honest, that wouldn't be the overarching or the overriding feeling. It's when you see such a positive response and people responding so well, and that sense of solidarity that exists within our membership, but then the wider community. There was plenty of comments from fans of other clubs who were really up for it and really, really positively moved by it. I think that's a really, when you recognize that solidarity exists here between people in Ireland and people in Palestine, and when, you know, it can feel very hopeless, this conflict, and the atrocities that are being committed, and we want to see change and we want to see something happen. And so, you know, it was a real honor to meet with the Palestinian FA and to be hosted in the embassy. And then next, it just all goes to, you know, let's make this a really special occasion, and let's, you know, all of those people have been out marching on the streets, and all of those campaigns that have been running, the artists for Palestine, the sports people for Palestine, like, we can all just use this event as a real moment to celebrate that solidarity that already exists.
Yeah, I think our instant reaction when we saw the tweets yesterday was to reach out and try and see if we could get you on and do whatever we can. I know we have a very small platform here, but it's probably the biggest women's football platform in the country in terms of coverage on a day-to-day and weekly basis. So we wanted to play our part. We'd love to be involved in any way, shape or form that you feel we can help.
I have a big question now. Bo's going to pull back out that Palestine jersey there. The white one with the Palestine flag side of
them. I reckon that's inevitable. Yeah, no, like, that jersey can still be worn. You know, it's still available. The proceeds are still going to Palestine Sports for Life, and you know, we'll hopefully, yeah, I think it's inevitable that we'll wear it at the match. But one of the first things is to find out colours, right, and what the Palestinian team are planning on wearing over here, etc.
You can't really wear the Palestinian flag if that's the same colours as their own jerseys. Sean, your role as well, we see a lot about it kind of on social media. People, I suppose, giving you a bit of a hard time, giving Bose as a club a bit of a hard time. It's a unique kind of position within the Irish sporting context. It develops these kind of events as well, which is, I feel, is part of our community clubs, which is what our League of Ireland clubs are. How has the last I suppose it's a year and a half or 2 years since you've taken up the position. How has it been from your point of view?
It's been amazing, to be honest. Like I'm sitting in an office here now that we didn't have when I joined. You know, we've grown this the community element of the club. That we've a brilliant staff now who are engaging with our men's and our women's team and organizing lots of really exciting sort of projects based around social inclusion, the LGBT community. You know, we have our own work on climate, and it honestly feels very exciting and a vibrant area of the club. And like you say, I think, you know, I don't think any of us want to be like the clubs in the Premier League. We want to be something slightly different and something that resonates with our communities in a meaningful way. And this is how we're doing it, and it's working. I think we're having plenty success, and I think there's a lot of exciting initiatives that will come. Like you say, this match, this opportunity to respond to something that the members care about, is the essence of what we want to be able to do as a club, and that's why we have a community strategy that we launched last year. You know, it covers areas around rehabilitation, around health, education, sustainability, and climate. So we want to do the things that the members see as meaningful. And I think this match is a perfect example of that, but there's plenty of other things that we have fan groups that care about and we want to work on them.
For me, just a couple of things that I've noticed, like everybody obviously sees the annual toy appeal for the direct provision, but like I don't know if you've seen it last week yourself, Refney. Some of Bowes women's players were also in Mountjoy last week as well, and you know, these sort of things. And I remember seeing a couple of years ago RT sort of had things where it was some of the Bowes people going into playing five-a-side matches inside the likes of Mountjoy prison. I think these sort of things in football probably don't get spoken enough about, because they go up on social media. It doesn't resonate with a lot of people. But like when you see what the work that goes on behind the scenes, I think the role and what Bowes are trying to do, you know, it's commendable. We're starting to see more and more clubs now starting to look at community officers and things like that to sort of bring more of inclusion. And it's good to see clubs taking the lead on these sort of things and being like, we want to drive it on. We want to sort of take that initiative, because Without our communities, League of Ireland clubs are nothing.
I don't think it's accidental that these type of programs, these type of developments within the club, specifically in Bohemians in the last probably 4 to 5 years, I know you're part of that, Sean, is coinciding with the sold-out signs week in, week out at Daily Mount Park. I think they go hand in hand. You're dragging in people that have never been to League of Ireland before, and they feel like they're part of that family, that part of that community, and they want to buy a season ticket. They want to come to games. They're not necessarily even there for the football. They just want to feel part of what's going on at Daily Mount Park. It's an exciting time for the club, and I think it's a really, really positive thing. I know we had Daniel on the show, on the men's equivalent of this show, a couple of years back when the link-up with DCU happened, and some of the stuff that's happening in the club is just really, really exciting. Sometimes we look at the cynical side of things on social media and the cesspit that is Twitter at times, but it's when you actually scratch back the kind of the hyperbole about some of these programs and the kind of the hot takes on some of these programs, they really do provide that kind of link to the local community. Sean, what are you working on other than this at the moment? What other things are going on across the club in Bohemians?
Well, just to touch on, just before we leave that point, I think, you know, it has to be said that, and we mentioned it just before coming on the show, like in terms of our women's football, the partnership that we have with Dublin Bus is an incredibly valuable one. It's based on values. It's based on promoting the women's game. It's very, very meaningful. And we've two community colleagues now working on aspects of this, which includes bringing young people to our women's football matches, and the numbers are very significant for our first match, our first home match against Athlone. So this is you know, exactly what you say, Brefni. It's not only the sold out signs for the men's fixtures. We want to see those signs for the women's fixtures as well, right? And hopefully continually building the case for why Daily Mount needs to be redeveloped as soon as possible, because that's the bottleneck for not just the football side of things, but that community side, that people belonging to something that that has real meaning. And you just have to go and look at that, at the manifesto that we brought out with Dublin Bus at the beginning of last season around promoting the women's game. And you really begin to see these things are not in isolation. It's all about promoting our league, making sure that more people are involved and making sure that, you know, we are having a positive social impact while it goes. In terms of other work that's ongoing, we on the climate side, you know, you could have Ava and Aveen, my community colleagues, on at any point, and they'd talk about all this fantastic work they're doing around a new initiative called Pride on the Pitch being something that's kicking off very soon, which is bringing young members of the LGBT community into football for the first time. We've got a Football Unites Us All program, which is working with the nurseries, Bohemians Nursery and nurseries of affiliate clubs and even a GAA club, Na Fianna, to bring people from non-Irish backgrounds in and make those more diverse and friendly and welcoming to newly arrived Irish. We also have some really exciting initiatives on the climate side, particularly a project called The Spark, which is a whole range of things, a new library of things, a bike library, an educational program, all community oriented and sort of bringing that, you know, we're a fan-owned football club and we want to bring that same philosophy into the world of climate action and teach people that, you know, if you can own a football club, you can also own a retrofitting business or a solar farm and you know, you could benefit from that in the same way you benefit from owning a football club. So there's a really an awful lot going on. And now we've landed a very significant women's international match into the middle of it. So it's going to be a busy spring.
Talk about the women's game specifically now. As people listen to this, we have huge numbers on the live stream, nearly 200 people watching us at the moment, which by our standards, we're a small podcast, but we don't quite get those numbers on a regular basis. We can only put that down to your inclusion on the show. But in terms of where people can go, there's a huge interest in this event, in this campaign in general. When can we expect to know more about tickets and all that sort of stuff? What's the timeline?
Well, you kind of on some level, just to give people a sense, you know, like it was myself and Daniel attended that meeting last week. We've got a team here, but it's not a particularly big team. And we have to now move through all of the thinking around, you know, we've committed that we will fly the Palestinian team here, we'll accommodate them, we will use any additional proceedings to go to charity humanitarian causes in Palestine. So there's an awful lot for us to sit down and figure out, and Daniel sent me an email earlier, copied in a few other people, and there must have been 20 or 30 items to go through before we can put out the tickets. So it would be remiss of me to give you any sort of really confident date. The tickets will come. We'll give people a proper heads up in advance. We're working to do that as quickly as possible. But as exciting as this is, the timeline for it was very much suggested by the Palestinian FA. They wanted to see this as a celebration of the Nakba, the forced displacement of Palestinian people, which is 76 years ago, on May 14th. So the match is happening May 15th, the day after. Just to give you context, so we didn't go in with a plan to have this match in May. It just so happened that when the date was suggested, it fit with our women's team calendar and the use of Daily Men calendar as well. The other piece just to stress on this is I think that if people are listening and want to be involved, and I think planning events, proceedings, marches around gigs, whatever it is, around this fixture would be a really nice thing, so that there could be a lot of spontaneous actions and shows of solidarity happening around the match itself. And then the final thing, just you probably have other points to make, but I think that, like, we will also be putting out calls for volunteers, for people to get involved, for people and like keeping an eye out for that and getting in touch if people can offer real tangible support in that way, that would be really great as well.
I suppose top of the list would be accommodation. I think all the funds might go just to pay the hotel fees in Dublin at the moment.
There's a hotelier listening now who wanted to give us a few
couple free of hotelers. Fantastic. Yeah. You'd take them. Sean, listen, thanks so much for coming in at short notice and having a chat with us about what promises to be an absolutely fantastic night for not just in the local sense, but in a global sense as well, in terms of that campaign. But for Bowes ladies, I'm sure it's a fixture they didn't expect to have when the fixture list came out. I'm sure they'll be looking forward to it in a couple of weeks' time. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate you taking time out of your day.
Not at all, Brefty. And just to finally say, like, obviously, it's wonderful that Ken and the team are so excited for this match as well, and we just hope we can repay them with support over the course of the year as well. So it's really exciting to see the league kicking off and have such a young, promising team going into the season.
I suppose before we let you go there, your first home game, I know you're not directly involved with the women's team, but it's Saturday week at home to Athlone, the President's Cup champions and the FAI Cup champions. You host them in Dalymount on Saturday afternoon, just the day before St. Patrick's Day. So a good day out for anyone to come along and maybe get familiar with Dalymount if you haven't been there in a while, ahead of that visit of the Palestinian national team on the 15th of May. Sean, thanks very much for joining us.
Fair play, lads.
Sean McCabe there of Bohemians. Aaron, I just want my tickets. I just want to go to the game.
To be honest with you, you know, I don't get involved in a lot of this political stuff on purpose. So I try to avoid all that on social media. But, like, as soon as it was announced, you were sort of like, okay, what can we do? How can we? Is there something I can do? And, you know, even to promote it, to help them. And it's a great cause. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of other things that they'll probably plan in and around it and things like that. But can you imagine what it'd be like to have a sold out Dalymount Park for a game like that, to see a Bowes women's team, considering where they came from when they were playing in the Oscar Traynor a couple of years ago, front of nobody really, you know, to now playing a friendly against the Palestinian women's national team. I think it's great, and there's a lot of good things that do happen on Bowes. Like, I know Sean mentioned a little bit with the bus. I'm sure other clubs fans don't like it when they see a Dublin bus rolling around with Bowes players on the side of it, but to see the women front and centre, the amputees, like, it's great. It's a great initiative, and I hope it's a success for Bowes, and I hope whatever other clubs decide to run other types of events this year, you know, same likewise, we'll be happy to support them as well in any way we can, and in terms of that, just because the Bowes and Palestine, we'll be happy to support all other events.
Absolutely. Just before we leave that topic, we have a message in here with a great stuff, lads, with, of course, the red and black, obviously from Colm O'Reilly, a Bowes fan, who's obviously looking forward to that game as well. Thanks very much for the kind words.
The one thing I will say, Brefny, is I hope the club price accordingly, you know, and the easy option in these sort of games is just to say, you know, we just want fans there. But I think they need to, and I think they will sort of price it in an accordance to, you know, yes, to make some money for a good cause, as well as getting the crowd, and I'm sure the Bowes fans and many other fans will look to go along just because of the occasion that it is.
I would imagine so. I can't see there being a problem trying to maximise the return for that. Let's get into some of the football stuff. President's Cup played over the weekend. Athlone Town 3-0 winners against Piemont. We spoke to, I suppose, Dominic off air before we went live, and he kind of thought it was a bit of a surprise, but it's been coming for Athlone for a while, hasn't it?
Scoreline's probably a little bit surprising to a lot of people, but the fact that Athlone winning, if you said 2-0, people maybe wouldn't be as, but like the fact that 3 second-half goals, and like I spoke to Larry Ryan at the league launch, and you could see how much the confidence it sort of taken from last year. And like the thing is, if Kieran Kilduff had to come in at the start of last season, could they be in title challengers again? Like, the way they finished the second half of the season, there's no doubt about it that they were title contenders. And I think it's a little bit of a statement. If you're a PML fan, as I said earlier, I wouldn't be getting too worried about it. Other clubs will be sort of saying, you know, don't get carried away. It's only the President's Cup. Yes, it is a glorified friendly, but it's the last opportunity to make that statement before the start of the season. And I think from an Athlone viewpoint, they've hit the ground running. They'll be looking to hit the ground running again this week.
Yeah, it really set them up last year. So we'll see an exciting time for them. Of course, they host Piemont United again, a repeat of the game on Saturday afternoon. As well as that, just bring up the
No, actually, is it Piemont?
It is.
No, Piemont. It's Athlone and Galway this weekend.
Oh, my
fixtures are Athlone and Galway. Do you want
to? Oh, no, you're right. You're right, Jay. You're right. I'm looking at the wrong ones. I'm all over the place.
It's been a long day.
That's for sure. So Athlone and Galway, they know each other quite well. They'll be looking forward to kind of getting stuck into each other. There's no love lost between those two sides. There's so many players have played for both teams at this stage.
But the thing is, though, both sides are probably about 20-30% stronger, in my opinion, to where they were last year. I think Galway made some good signings. I think bringing in Maria O'Sullivan probably surprised a lot of people, the fact that she's gone to Galway, having previously played for Cork before going to America. In terms of an Athlone, like, the big loss is, and everybody says it, Dana Sheriff leaving the club, going to Switzerland. I think a lot of people are probably surprised when she said last year about potentially looking at seeing could she get into a future Ireland squad, and then to leave the league. But like, they brought Casey Howe in. I think Casey will hit the ground running from this year. I think there probably is a little bit extra pressure on Maddie Gibson as well this year, because Maddie will probably have to deliver. But there's no doubt she is capable of. And I think the fact that Athlone team, like, from winning the FAI Cup, how much probably brings them on about 10-20%. This is probably, for me, the game of the first round of the weekend of the season, and it promises to be a barnstormer. These games against these two sides tend to be very, very good games of football.
Absolutely. Just looking at the pictures, they've changed slightly since they were first released, so there are a few times differences on what I have in front of me. But it is an exciting weekend. Back to see it. Casey Howe hit the ground running last week, got a goal down there in Athlone. I think, to be honest, I think that's possibly one of the signings of the off-season from players who were already within the league. Obviously, we don't know a whole pile about the girls coming in from outside.
Yeah, for me, it's one of these signings of the window. I think the other signing of the window, and we'll speak about it when we get the shells, is probably bringing back in Rowan McLaughlin after being out for a couple of years. But I think from an Athlone viewpoint, they lose Dana. They know straight away they need to replace her. I think a lot of people probably, if you looked at the way Sligo finished last year, you probably sort of knew Casey was on the way out the door. And like, she done well for Sligo, but it was difficult. This is where we really get a test of Casey's ability this year and how good Casey can be in this league, playing with an Athlone side who, no disrespect to Sligo, are probably expected to win a lot more games than Sligo were. And can she score 15-20 goals this season? Potentially. If Athlone are to be a top three, top two team, she's probably going to have to bag 20 goals from this season.
I'll be honest, when I saw Sligo had kept Emma Doherty and Seymour and Devaney, I had big hopes for them. I think the loss of Casey Howe was a big loss for Tommy coming into that job in the Showgrounds this year. It's going to be a challenge for Sligo to pick up points this year. But I say that every year, and they continue to do okay.
She's not going to like me for this, but I don't know if you've seen Amber Barrett's Week 1 League Ireland predictions. She predicted Sligo Rovers are going to get a 2-2 draw with Shells on Saturday. I just can't see it, unfortunately. I think for Sligo, Sligo could take a couple of defeats in the some big-ish defeats in the first half of the season. For me, it's going to take a bit of time, because there's no doubt Tommy's going to change the playing style. He's going to change the way they played compared to Steve. He's going to try and make them more compact. Like, listen, you've said it before, and Tommy's probably admitted it, that at times the football they play isn't the most pretty, his teams, but they're effective and they're winning games. And to see what he done with Athlone a couple of years ago, to get the second in the league and get to a cup final, if you offered me that compared to playing trying to play extravagant football and losing every day of the week, I'd take Tommy's style of football, no problem. And I think he's going to take a bit of time to sort of mould that Sligo Rovers team in and get them up to where he wants it. I think for me, the one viewpoint I would say is that Emma Hansbury probably played the most football she's played in a long time last year. Having her fit this year and stay fit is massive. I do like the signing of Yvonne Hedigan, I'm not going to lie, but I think Yvonne's going to take a bit of time just to get back up to speed, considering she's been out for nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I think so. It's a big task, but I think Sligo will be there or thereabouts. The fact that you've written them off now pretty much means they're going to serve you a nice humble pie in about 5 or 6 weeks.
Tommy's team do. I listen, I'll tell you one thing. I have so much time for that man, and you know, if he gives me humble pie, I'll happily eat it, and I'll walk away with a smile.
To be fair, the Sligo humble pie tastes so much nicer. You know? In terms of the other teams at the top of the table, the teams are expecting to be in the shake-up. We're looking at Shamrock Rovers. Shells, of course, won the title 15-16 months ago for the second time in a row. Now we're looking at Piemont coming in.
Right, I'm going to say something, and it's going to be controversial.
You're going to get yourself cancelled now, eh?
No, I don't think Shamrock Rovers make the top three this year.
Wow.
I don't think Rovers make the top three this year. That's being honest. I can't see it. I think I would have expected to see them bring in more players. I understand colleagues saying they probably had too many, but there's been a lot of good young players that have gone out of that team, and to be honest, I just really can't see it. Savannah McCarthy's been having has had a bit of an injury as well. I seen Amanda Borden was carrying a knock as well. I think if Roberts don't get off to a massive hot start, I think they could struggle to finish in the top three this year.
Must remember to clip this, because I think this could be your Alan Hansen, you win nothing with kids moment. I think
it's nothing to do with kids, to be honest with you. It's just I think they probably, I was expecting to sign a few more to bring a bit more quality in. Like you have to think they lost it. They let eight players go, albeit they brought some Lawless back in recent weeks after initially letting it go. I just think they'll struggle a bit this year, and I'm not convinced they'll break that top three. I think if I'm being honest with you, and I'll set the stall out straight, I think the top two this year are potentially going to be Shells and Piemont again. I think Athlone or Wexford could potentially get into that third spot. I know you sort of have a bit of reservations as to whether Wexford will. I just think Ellen Malloy back this year, the new change of management, what's going on with Wexford, I'm just expecting quite a bit from them this year. Maybe my expectations are a bit high. In terms of the league winner, it's difficult because it's only 20 games.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Galway at all yet, because I think Galway are going to be one of the outsiders to challenge this year. They did really well last year in the Avenir Cup. Okay, granted, it's the Avenir
Cup. I'll tell you why I didn't. Do I think Galway have that potential? Yes. I just think it could be a year too early for them. They're definitely going in the right direction. Could Galway win the FAI Cup this year? Absolutely. Could they defend the All-Ireland Cup again this year? Absolutely. The one thing I'm going to say is I'm going to keep my mouth shut about Galway United this year.
You can't keep your mouth shut about anything, Aaron.
Do you remember what I said about Galway United last year?
Oh, you probably said they were going to finish bottom of the table.
I said something along the lines of that, and you know what? I had so much humble pie about Galway last year. You're probably right. Galway could be the team to fight Wexford and Athlone for that third place. I do think Shamrock Rovers will be in the mix. I just don't think they will get third.
I think they'll be thereabouts. I think we're going to see a really tight battle at the top of the table. I think Piemont have less of a point to prove this year than they had last year. It's very tough to keep that intensity and that fire going as well as they did last season, because they did have a point to prove last year, and by God, did they prove it. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can maintain that intensity and that pace and that, I suppose, commitment to the cause this season. They have much, much less individually to prove this year than they had maybe 12 months ago. I think Athlone are going to be thereabouts. Galway going to be thereabouts. I worry for DLR. I know you spoke to Laura Heffernan. I know that video is coming out tomorrow. And I think even her demeanor tells you that she knows it's going to be a tough year for them this year. A lot of young players, a lot of young, exciting players. But no more than you think in Galway a year or two behind where they need to be. I think DLR, again, they're that just that maybe generation behind the players coming through. They will be a force again in maybe 3 or 4 years' time, but it's going to take that little bit of period of time to build back up. Treaty could surprise a few this year. But what I like... I'm not sure if I got cut off there, but it's an awful lot more challenging for the league in terms of the gaps aren't as big anymore. So the bottom teams can take points off the top sides. We can see a lot of that happening as we go on. So the gaps, we're not seeing double figure scores. We're not seeing 8-7 nils week in, week out. It's now a 2 or 3 nil defeat for the top teams against the bottom sides for the most part.
I think it's just going to pick up on a point you made about the other waves. The one thing about Waves for me is that this is the first transfer window in a long time that they haven't been good. The two players who left, Aoife Brophy and Sarah McKevitt, were sort of out the club last summer. So they haven't been there since the summer. It's probably the first time where they've been able to bring in players and not lose players. I 100% agree with you. They're on the back foot massively this year. It's going to take an awful lot of work to get them to where they need to be. They made a lot of silly mistakes in games last year where they probably shouldn't have made them. So I do agree with you on that. I just think it's interesting that's the first window they haven't actually lost quite a lot of players. I think if I was to say this, I'd probably say the team I'm most excited about seeing this year is probably Treaty. Just because we don't really know That's what I'm most excited about, that because we can sort of tell P Mounts the shackles are off in terms of they're no longer underdogs. And I don't care what they say, James O'Callaghan will kill me for that, because they're no longer the underdogs. We're going to be talking about them week in, week out. These younger players, they've kept every one of them, bar Tara O'Hanlon, who we all knew Tara was going. We all knew Tara was going to get a move during the window. Like the Ellen Dolans, Jess Fitzgeralds, Freya Healy's, Freya Roaches. These are all going to take a massive step on this year. Plus, there's more to come behind that. I think from what Shells have done, I think Shells have tried to go back to a bit more of their identity in terms of a bit of youth. They brought in back the likes of Jess Gargan. They've brought in Mia Dodd back, who's played for the club previously. They've brought other players who played for the club previously. But I think the Roma McLaughlin one for me is massive. How she can dictate games, I think will have a massive impact on what way Shells will go this year. The one signing we haven't even mentioned, Breffney, is Ava O'Mahony coming to Shelburne from Texas, having previously played for Cork City, the Irish international. I think for Shells, since Chloe Mustaki left, they've been crying out for a left-sided defender. Leah Doyle's done good jobs for them there at times, but Leah's also gone into centre-back at times when Pearl's got injured. But they've just been sort of crying out for that additional left-footed player. And it's one where I think this league, the biggest thing this year about the league is Shells P-Man playing the second week of the season. So there's no real hiding room in terms of one of the big teams start to play each other early with only 20 games. And every game matters so much more compared to maybe 27 games 2 years ago. So I don't see a team running away with it. I don't see P-Mount winning the league as dominant as they did last year. I think this year, I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's one of the lower winning points totals across the league this year.
I think that brings it back to what I was saying about the standard being much tighter in terms of the bottom and the top of the league. We're seeing the benefits of the under-17 league in 2018. Those girls now, whether they're 15, 16 or 17 that were played that season, are now 6 years older. So they're 21, 22, 23. They're coming into their prime as players at this level. They're all in college or just out of college, and they really are. They're women now as opposed to the girls. They're technically so much better than the girls who are even 2 or 3 years older than them. And we're seeing that technical ability just improving year on year with the products coming out of these academies.
The funny thing is that, like, as you just said there at your last point, the players after them, like your Hannah Healy's, Jess Fitzgeralds, Rebecca Devereaux, Fianna Bradley's, Grace McInerney, these sort of young players across the board, Michaela Lawrence in Wexford, like all across the board. And I apologise to any club if I haven't mentioned the player belongs to, because they all have smashing young players coming through, and it's a case of they're going to drive a lot of the older players to have to really want to be still there, because it's not going to be as easy as it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where an experienced player, just because they've the name as well, that they're guaranteed the shirt on their back. When I spoke to Pearl Slattery, Pearl said, the younger players around me push me every day that I have to work harder to keep that shirt. And I think the older players now realise that there's a lot more commitment in it for them compared to with the youngsters who are used to it and stuff like that. And that's what makes it exciting. That's what makes you want to go to watch games, because there was a lot of games in when I started watching the league and when the league first started around that, you knew every result nearly, bar one or two games a year before you went to the game. Whereas now I'm going to games and I'm sort of like, I don't know. Like, look at last year, Wexford, like, Treaty should have beat them. Wexford got a last minute equaliser, whereas a year previously, if we'd have been saying that was going to happen, people are like, you're messing, you're having a laugh. Whereas now, we go into these sort of games, it's a lot more difficult to call who's gonna win them. Yes, there's still going to be games where, say, the top teams are coming in against the weaker teams, you know they're going to win them, but you're not going to say, they're going to win 6 or 7. As you said earlier, the prime example being Treaty against Shells in Talca Park last year, where Treaty had a massive chance to win the game, and then Shells go up and score late on, and it's a different result. And that's the sort of thing where the league is getting better. It's pushing on, and it can only benefit internationally. It can only benefit everything. But I think we still have a good bit of work to do as well in terms of bringing the league on that little bit further. I think the academies are doing great jobs, though.
Well, let's put that to the test then, and take a look at the fixtures for next weekend as we go to the website for a few moments. You see there the fixtures this weekend. Shells Sligo Rovers prediction there. You don't think a 2-2 draw is a realistic prediction?
No, I think Shells will probably win 2 or 3. Shells will probably win 3 now.
So Amber Barrett, you're hoping you do better than her in our predictions this week. DLR and Shamrock Rovers, it's hard to look past the Rovers win here.
Yeah, I think Rovers will win. I don't think it'll be as easy as people think, but I think they will. They'll be too good in the second half.
Piemont visit Cork. Thoughts on that?
It's probably the one result where we're probably saying we'd expect Piemont to win and win comfortably. The one thing about Cork, and last year I said it so many times, and I said it when I spoke to Danny Murphy at the league launch as well, is they've been great for first half performances, and then sort of second half they've died off. If they can get that to where they take that step on to where for 70, 80, 90 minutes, they can be as competitive in the game, they can push teams like Piemont. I just think first day of the season, Piemont should be too strong.
Yeah, of course, that game in Turner's Cross, not at Lone. I just changed that legacy of the mistake in the our fixtures on the website. Wexford and Bowes. This, for me, is probably the tie of the round. These two games probably the ties of the round. Wexford-Bowes. I think we'll see where both teams are at on the first day of the season with that one.
Played a preseason friendly the other week and drew nil all. Yes, you can't read an awful lot into it. A lot of changes in Bowes. I think Wexford have been quite consistent. They've kept a lot of players. Yes, they brought in some good players. I think from a Wexford viewpoint, new management in there, probably a slightly different style of football, but it's the same with Bowes with a new manager. I think for these two sides, like if Wexford are to push on from the really, really poor season they had last year, they were probably the most disappointing team last year. They need to be winning games like this from a Bowes viewpoint. They've got the monkey off their back of beating Wexford in Ferry Carrick Park. So I think it'll be close, but I think Wexford will probably just shed.
And finally, at Lone Town, Galway United, fresh off their President's Cup winners. Two of the current title holders, the Avenir Sports Cup final against the FAI Cup final. As we've said so many times in the show, they know each other so well. Are we looking at a cagey kind of chess match, just early stages? Better not to lose it than maybe to get that win on the day?
The problem is, I'm going to sit on the fence in terms of the score of the result because I'm genuinely not sure what way this is going to go. But I in terms of cagey, we've got two managers who are going to be desperate to win the game and start that season well. So I don't know. See, the problem is it could be very cagey or it could be a really, really open game of football and it could be 4, 5, 6 goals in the game. I wouldn't be surprised with either result. They tend to have a couple of high-scoring games, but the one thing I will say is I think it'll be at least 5 or 6 goals in the game.
Okay, any outside predictions for maybe top scorer for the season? Putting you on the spot here now. We haven't chatted about this before.
Oh, outside top scorer. Noel Murray looks very fit this offseason. I think she's going to have a big say, especially having Roma McLaughlin in around. I think she could have a good run at it this year. I think the favourite for me is probably Ellen Doolan of Piemont. Is probably the favourite. You look what she's doing the second half of the season. I think she scored 8 goals after the World Cup, and I wouldn't be surprised if Ellen starts banging the goals in again. I'd say if I was to give you 3, I'm going to say Casey Howe, Ellen Dolan, and I think if she can stay fit, Rhianna Jarrett gets back on the scoring boots and scores a good 15 goals this season.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't disagree with you. Casey Howe would probably be my pick if I had to pick one who's going to probably come from the outside in the same way maybe as Emily Corbett did 2 seasons ago. So interesting to keep an eye on that as we progress through the year. Obviously, of course, the underage all kicked off last weekend. The under-19, there was wins for Shells and Piemont in Group A as Athlone, DLR and Shamrock Rovers got off to winning ways in Group B in the under-19 league. And Cork City, Wexford and Waterford all enjoyed victories in the under.
Roughly, take away Cove against Cork against Cove, the five nil game. Every other game, there was a margin of less than 2 goals in the game.
Yeah, but that's it's just the standard of players in these leagues is scarily level, which is phenomenal. It's a really good promotion for the leagues. There was, of course, obviously games in the under-17s. We won't mention that 10-0 victory for Shamrock Rovers in their under-17 game. But Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians and Finn Harps off to winning ways in Group A. In Group B, Galway and Treaty as one of those games fell foul of the weather. I think it was DLR Piemont was called off on Sunday, I want to say. Saturday, actually. Group C, Wexford, Kerry FC and Cork City. Kerry FC obviously making their debut in the Group C of
Kingdom
Zone 17, and they've had some big wins over the last weekend. They obviously won the men's Munster Senior League, had a great game down in down in Kerry as well, and Tralee on Friday night in the league. So lots of excitement down there in Kerry as well. So that's another one for Treaty to be worried about in that region, but plenty to be had in the under 17 grade. Of course, you can get all of these information on the website, along with some of the junior leagues from around the country. You can see they're on our website. You can check that out at finalwhistle.ie. But for us, I suppose the last thing we can do with the league to be played at the weekend, Aaron, is to talk about the draw that took place. I think the whole country, even non-sports people, sorry for Eileen Gleeson and her charges with that draw. I don't think it could have gone much worse.
I was close. I'm not going to lie. I was close in my predictions. I predicted we would get Spain, Germany, Sweden, and England. I predicted. I was close. A lot of people, and I'm going to answer a question that I've seen frequently on social media for a lot of people. Why were we able to draw France, England, and Spain, the third, fourth, and fifth team in the world? The simple answer is the results are based off the previous Nations League. So because France won their group, France were in pot one. Because England finished second in the group, England were in pot two. And because Sweden finished third in their group, they were in pot three. That's why it was. In terms of the groups, you look at some of the others, you know, there's lower ranked teams. I think pot four probably would have been the easier one to get. You just knew we were getting England. You just knew it. You know, for me, I've been saying it for a long time. I thought that was going to happen. There's no easy game. The one thing that everybody's talking about, we're guaranteed a playoff for the Euros. But what nobody's also talking about, though, Breffni, is if we finish bottom of the group, we also get relegated to League B for the next Nations League. And I don't think people have realised that. People are more fixated on the Euros. And yes, we want to be at this sort of stage. I had a chance to chat to Eileen Gleeson yesterday and hear her thoughts on it. And like, the one thing that stood out for me is the sort of the motto that they have. It's like, be where your feet are, is her quote. It's sort of being, you know, where you are, you're there. And I think they know the task is massive. They know the task is going to be big. We were expecting fixtures to drop today, and they haven't come. I was hearing there's a delay. They should be out tomorrow, so we should know where things lie, where we're going to be. I would expect the England game to be in the Aviva. There is potential that other games could be in the Aviva. The one thing I would say is the fixture dates have been set, in the sense that of the windows, one game is on a Friday, one game is on a Tuesday. So I think the FBI just need to be careful. There's a bit of talk. I seen John Fallon saying earlier on social media that June the 4th, Ireland, I don't think, can play at home, because I think the men are at home that night as well. So that means that could potentially have to be an away day. There's some great trips. For me, someone who's gone to a lot of these, being at all six Nations League games in Albania, I still won't forget things like that. It's exciting. You want to play these glamour teams. But yes, you do have that in the back of your mind, that are we ready? Are we, you know, how will we step up? Time will tell. The great thing is for Irish fans and for the likes of ourselves, we've literally got about a month, just shy of a month until four weeks on Friday, until the first game is. Not a lot of time to wait, and, you know, excitement is building. Couldn't have been a harder draw, but listen, you go up to League A, you're playing with the big teams, you're always going to get a different.
We want to be in that grade, but we also want to stay in that grade. And we have got results against Sweden in the past. And I think on our night, we can take results off any of those. I think England might be a massive challenge, but we can take results off any of those sides. So here's hoping that we can do that. In terms of the overall prediction, I might as well put your neck on the block. Who's going to win the league this year?
Shelburne.
Very controversial, but I suppose they've been thereabouts for years. I can't see them being too far away.
I'm not gonna be late for certain parts. I just think the fact that they brought Gargan back in, they have O'Mahony in, Roman McLaughlin for me could be an ill. I would go as far as saying if Roman McLaughlin stays fit this year, I would put a bet on Roman McLaughlin being player of the year if she's there for the entire year.
Yeah, it's a massive call. Aaron, we're way over time, but I think the two lads, thank you so much to Dominic Foley, brand new to the league. He's looking forward to getting his season up and running in 10 days' time with the visit of DLR to Markets Field, and also to Sean McCabe of Bohemians. I think that's one of the most exciting things that I've seen in the Women's League, and a really good opportunity for Bowes to fill the place on the night, but also to really instill that women's team as part of the match-going culture of the fans. And hopefully that will bring fans into the women's game that will stay in the women's game as they progress through the season. I think that's it for this week, Aaron. We're way over time. We might as well call it there, but plenty of excitement over the coming days. Thank you to everyone who was watching us live and watch us back on playback over the coming days. The Women's League, get out to a game this weekend. We've gone through the fixtures. You know where your local team is. Get out, support them, buy a jersey, and go to games. Bring your young ones, any young influential girls in the area, bring them to the game. Get them in. If you can't see, you can't be, and all that. So very important that they get to see their heroes or their new future heroes playing in these fabulous games over the next couple of weeks. Aaron, talk to you again next week.